Everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. Hope you had a great weekend. It's February 19th, 2024. I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks for being here. Today, we are going to talk about what happened at Riviera on Sunday. The context of Hideki Matsuyama winning for the ninth time on the PGA Tour in his career. Exciting win to come from six behind and then wind up winning by three after shooting 62, nearly tying the course record of 61 on the final day at Riviera. Pretty cool stuff. We'll talk about that. This week's an interesting week for me, because I'm going on a family golf trip tomorrow, starting tomorrow morning, and I'll be down in Orlando. I do this trip every year. If you've listened to different versions of my podcast over the years, you probably have heard of this. It's called the Greensburg Cup, and this year we have 14 total guys in a house in Orlando. They're mostly my in-laws, or you know, guys that, like me, married into the family, who are in-laws by extension. And we have an awesome time. We play five rounds of golf most years. This year, we're going to try four for the first time, which I think is a good thing, actually. And the competition is a three-day competition. So we're going to play basically a scramble, well, it's a shamble, on Wednesday as a kind of a warm-up round. And then on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we will have three rounds of golf. So you'll have six nine-hole matches. And it's net match play. So you're playing against someone with strokes. If you're getting strokes, you get the strokes. It's not netted out. It doesn't really matter. But you play each hole match play. If you win the hole, you get a point. Lose the hole, no points. Have the hole, 1/2 point. And you get a bonus point if you win the match. If you have the match, you get a 1/2 point each. And whoever has the most points through six matches and 54 holes wins. And I've won it five times. I've lost the last two. It was close 2 years ago, but not especially last year. And it's just the best week of the year. I mean, it's so much fun. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of much more time on it, but I will be down there in Orlando starting tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to try to do a show on Tuesday. I can't make a whole lot of promises otherwise. I mean, I will try to do 15, 20-minute shows on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But as you might imagine, it gets out of control pretty quickly. And I don't want to produce a drunk episode. That doesn't sound very appealing. So this is a kind of week off this week with the Mexico Open at Vedanta. No offense to that tournament. It's had two very good winners in Jon Rahm and Tony Finau. And they have both battled each other in both of those years to win that tournament. We don't have Rahm this year, obviously. He is now part of LIV, and he wouldn't have come back anyway because he wasn't defending anything. But this is a golf course where you're going to be able to just kind of beat the crap out of him. You know, you're going to hit the ball as hard as you can, all that good stuff. And it's not going to be the most attractive week of golf. It's a week of golf, and I'm going to watch it on the weekend. But I do appreciate that the PGA Tour has figured out how to kind of integrate this tournament better into its geographic schedule, because you've got the West Coast Swing that just wraps up at Riviera, then you've got to go to the Florida Swing, and they've tried to fit in a Mexico tournament, whether it's this one in Vallarta or the one in Mexico City when it was a WGC, and it always just kind of seemed weird how they tried to fit it in. But what they got right about the Mexico Championship at the end at the WGC was having it before the Florida Swing. So go to the West Coast, hop down to Mexico, go do the Florida Swing. And they're doing that with this now. And I think that is a good thing. So we'll see what happens in the end this week, but it's not an especially strong field. I have no idea what we will get in terms of kind of compelling news. If there is something particularly compelling or something we got to talk about, I'll absolutely do a show. I will fight through beers and whiskeys to make sure it sounds cogent and good, but otherwise it probably is going to be a short week of shows. That all said, do you want to talk about Riviera today? I tweeted on Saturday that I thought every tournament so far this year has kind of lacked juice, lacked panache. Not because the golf wasn't interesting, but just a whole lot of things working against golf right now, working against the PGA Tour. One, you've got two tours, right? You've got a LIV tour that has players people miss. And that's not to say that they miss them so much they refuse to watch the PGA Tour, but you're missing them from some fields, and we've been missing them for several years now. And I think that has caught up a little bit. You do have some people that are diehard LIV fans. That's a much smaller part of this equation. But there are some of them who just don't watch the PGA Tour. I mean, someone unsubscribed from my newsletter. Quick shout out to my own newsletter, The Break. If you want to sign up for it, go to golfnewsnet.com. Twice a week. But someone unsubscribed because they're like, I follow Jon Rahm. I don't care about the PGA Tour anymore. I don't think there are a lot of those people, but there are those people. And then you've got the people who I think Mackenzie Hughes rightly identified as people who are just turned off by golf and the greed and the amount of money being thrown around and that kind of leading everything, all being about money. And some people replied to he talked about this in one of those walk and talks on CBS on Saturday, which I thought was great. And a couple doofuses responded by saying, well, of course these guys can play for money. And I don't think anyone is saying that they're not playing for money. I don't think that. I don't think anyone's confused that. If they are, they probably are very new to golf. It's not that. I think it's something that Mackenzie Hughes alluded to, something Max Homa alluded to, that there's been so much focus over the last couple of years about money, and there hasn't been but few utterances about the fans and about making the product better for them. And yes, they have come up with signature events, and those are nice to have the best, 43 of the world top 50 together, but we had those anyway. Maybe not quite as many of them, but more or less you did. I mean, everyone played RIV because of Tiger's involvement. Everyone played Jack's thing. Everyone played Arnie's thing. Well, not everyone, but most everyone played Arnie's, even after he passed away in 2016. People play those events. People play the FedEx Cup events. People play the players. People play the four majors. The things that they've added in are those events like Wells Fargo, which won't be a signature event next year. Travelers, Heritage, those tournaments that Century now being $20 million, which, hey, that's fine. I'm cool with that. But you still got a really good feel for that anyway. And Rory McIlroy still didn't play the Century. So you've created these tournaments, the schedule that is meant to appeal to the best players and have them play, and you know exactly when they're going to play, more than likely, and then they throw in some tournaments otherwise, and all that's well and good, but that really hasn't made the product better for the fan. There's still a ton of commercials. It's still a lot of interruption. I will give CBS a whole lot of credit for making their product better, and this tournament was the nadir 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was 2021, when it was just so bad, like commercial after commercial, hardly any shots, just a lot of chatter, bunch of useless crap. And I can still remember having a direct message conversation with someone on the CBS broadcast team, I won't reveal who, and he's like, yeah, you're right. You're right. And we need to get better. And, and they did. They are better. They're much better now. Seller Shy has been fantastic. Yes, they are still handcuffed by a commercial inventory that, to make it even close to break even, that's insane, especially compared to LIV Golf, which has no intention of really making money and it doesn't care about making money right now, not in the buying 30 and 60 second commercial spots sense. They don't care about that. They'd rather offer what amounts to as close to a humanly possible commercial free experience because they know the commercial on the PGA Tour is huge. And the end result of all this is it isn't necessarily better for the fan. We've got to get to that part. And there has been some increasingly vocal section of players. We got to get to that. When's that happening? With all this money coming in from Strategic Sports Group, when does the fan benefit? And hopefully the fan benefits soon, next couple of months. But in the meantime, you've had all these tournaments with unfortunate lack of panache, weather problems, telecast being not fun to watch because of the commercial load, not necessarily because the commentary is bad, although people may not like some of it, but the commercial load's bad. Unfortunate weather circumstances interrupting rounds or canceling them in full. I mean, even the PGA Tour champions couldn't avoid it. They had total washout on Sunday. They were going to try and play a 9-hole final round, which I actually love the idea of. Like, if you're going to try to get some golf in, just play 9 holes. At least have some semblance of a final round for someone to come back. I kind of like that. So I would like to see that become a thing, if that can be a thing in an unfortunate circumstance where weather is definitely going to almost certainly shorten play or cancel it. And that, I like that. But the, through Saturday, you're thinking, God, not another Patrick Cantlay tournament. And I'm sure there are some people who like Patrick Cantlay, but do not count me as one of them. The most awkward interview I've ever had in my entire life was with that guy. And he does not have a good reputation beyond just being an awkward human being. A lot of people don't like him, which I thought on Sunday made it especially hilarious that Rory McIlroy was in the booth, well, not in the booth, but doing commentary next to Amanda Renner, and he was talking through Cantlay playing and trying to be very nice and complimentary, because that McIlroy is very good at that kind of thing, putting a good face, good spin on things, even for someone he doesn't like or care for at all. And meanwhile, Cantlay is imploding. So that was kind of funny. But you got through Saturday, and you're like, oh man, Cantlay's going to run away with this thing. You're going to watch a guy slower than slow. And they don't, it's not Patty Ice because he's ice cold. It's because he's glacial. And then you get to Sunday. You're like, oh, here we go. This is going to stink. And Cantlay and Shoffley are playing together. They're slow. They're gross. They're a hole and a half, 2 holes behind. They finally get warned about it. They clean up. They go a little faster. Pace is not truly horrible, but still not good. And then they're going sideways because Cantlay can only make pars, can't make putts. You give the opportunity for Luke List to run up the board. He gets into the lead. He starts to fade in the middle of the back nine, because that stretch of holes, really 11 to 16, is the golf course. I mean, there are lots of great holes at Riviera, but really even 12 through 16, that's where you know what's going to happen to you. And for him, it was not particularly good. I mean, it wasn't bad. Had a great week, but just wasn't good enough to win. And then here comes Hideki Matsuyama, who shoots 3 under 32 on the front. Birdies the first three holes in the back, 10, 11, and 12. Gets into contention. Makes a couple of pars. Gets a 14, 15, 16. Makes a little bit of a bomb on 14. Get a little momentum. 15, par 4. Hard hole. Tough hole. Hits it to, 8 inches or 6 inches? I forget which one's which. 16, par 3, tricky golf hole, tricky pin, hits it to, I think they said 6, I think that was the 6-inch one, and I'm pretty sure it was even closer than that, kicks it in, goes to 17, birdie 17, makes a par in the last, shoots 62, he almost had the 61, and by then, it was academic, it was over, he had turned a 6-shot deficit into a 3-shot win. Incredible stuff from Hideki Matsuyama, who had not looked really good for a year and a half, and he had a good finish at Torrey Pines, wasn't especially effective at Phoenix for whatever reason, and then just out of nowhere, turns it on for 9 holes, and that's good enough to win in a leaderboard where everyone else that was in front of him just couldn't do it. And that's the second time in 3 tournaments, and the second signature tournament in a row, where you had someone have a huge, what turned out to be, final round. Because obviously, Wyndham Clark's 60 wasn't meant to be the final round, just turned out to be. But that set up the win, because it was good enough to just get past everybody else and run through the finish line. If they had played Sunday, maybe something different happened with Wyndham Clark, and that wouldn't have been the final round. But for 2 signature tournaments in a row, the final round, the winner turned in a total banger. If not a course record like Wyndham Clark, where we can talk about that with ball in hand, but pretty close to one from Matsuyama. Pretty incredible stuff. So, really cool to have him win again. I love watching Hideki Matsuyama play his best golf, because that means he is hitting it tight. The putts go in. You know, some putts go in. I mean, the vex of this era on the PGA Tour is just bad putters. Lots of bad putters. Great ball strikers and bad putters. And that's because length kills. The guys are long and they're good iron players, and then you get them within 5 feet and they can't even hit the hole. And it's really frustrating to watch. Really frustrating to watch. I mean, if you look at that leaderboard on Sunday, I talked about this going into the week, and I can't remember if it was on this show or the golf betting show, The Press. But Riviera is the place for tortured ball strikers because Poa greens are very difficult to read. They get bumpy. They're quick, but they're bumpy, so you can miss a lot. There's a little bit of luck involved. You got to kind of stick it tight to make sure you got putts you can make. Not a lot of longer putts go in. So it's fascinating that that board was what it was. And it turned out to be an interesting finish because Matsuyama made it interesting. Everything else, if Matsuyama had not done what he had done, oh my God, it would have been so boring. It would have been a total slog. You probably had a multi-man playoff, go like three or four holes with just boring pars. Hideki Matsuyama saved the West Coast swing, basically. And I don't even know if he saved it, but at least he made the final part of it interesting. The final part of it interesting. So, again, now you move to Mexico. You've got a tournament where you don't have a particularly good field. I think a lot of people will kind of take this week off, especially knowing that Rahm's not going to be there. You really don't have a built-in foil for Tony Finau. I'm not saying you need Rahm, but there are only four top 50 players in the field, and the other ones, two of them, are DP World Tour guys that came over. So Nicolai Højgaard, who I love this week. I love his game. He's going to be great. Probably going to win this week. And Ryan Fox, whose game I also love, and I think both of them can thrive here, but American fans on the main have no idea who those two dudes are. And Emiliano Grillo is the other guy in the top 50 who wins once every 8 years. Despite being a tremendous, tremendous golfer. So there's not going to be a whole lot of draw power to this event this week. One other thing I did want to point out that I thought was interesting, which is you had Rory McIlroy in that booth, right? And he was so good. He did such a great job. I think, and I've talked about this on Twitter, I would love to see more of this. I'd love to see having a player come in and be the third wheel, whether that's for NBC or CBS. And you got to have guys who know how to kind of describe golf to people. And McIlroy did such a good job of describing golf to people, especially strategy around some of the holes in the back. His description of why he likes hitting high balls, right? I mean, he hits a high ball, but he wants to keep his drives below the trees at this golf course for whatever reason. It just, and I agree with that. I played it one time. And I like a lower ball flight, not low, but medium ball flight. And he was talking about why that fit his eye, particularly on 11, a hole where there's just pain left and right off the fairway because it's just a shoot. Like, can you hit it straight? If you can hit it straight, you've got a chance. And I understand why he would like a lower ball flight for that, because you tend to try to hit it straighter when you hit it lower, if that makes sense. And I really liked his description of it. And just more stuff like that. If you could just get players to come in, and it doesn't even have to be that long. It can be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever they're willing to give. But that kind of insight is great. And I kind of wish you would get more of that from the people calling the golf. And I don't mean this as an indictment of CBS. I think they have improved tremendously. But it would be really cool to hear someone like Frank Nablo, who's a PGA Tour winner, a great player. Trevor Immelman, a Masters champion. He's played this golf course plenty. To have them talk about their interactions with the players in the field this week, get a sense of how they approach the golf course, what they're thinking about technically, what they're thinking about visually, it would be much better. It would be great to have those insights. But hearing it first person from the pro themselves describing it makes it all the better. So I will keep banging the table for that. I hope that comes. I would love for it to happen. So all in all, a nice Sunday kind of bails out what otherwise was an unfortunate week between Tiger getting either the flu or the runs or both, and Spieth not being able to add. I do want to talk about that here because we didn't do a show over the course of the weekend after he had been DQ'd. And I guess that could be the other topic for today. And one topic I'm going to skip, but I encourage you to check me out on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. Tweeted out a version of our newsletter, The Break. So I'm doing it on the website, or a website called Beehive, and also over email. But Tony Finau's long-running or weird-looking lawsuit from last year that got dismissed. The appeal got dismissed, so good for him and his family. I may talk about that tomorrow, but I want to get into this very briefly before we wrap things up. The whole thing about Spieth being DQ'd for signing for an incorrect score and the reaction to it is so strange to me. Because on one hand, there are so many people banging the drum. Why do we have it? Why? There are two different arguments being made at the same time. And one, I think, is better than the other. The one that I think is terrible is, well, we have ShotLink following this stuff. We have walking scorers. We have referees. We have all these people who are following each player's shots. And some are doing it with technology, and some are doing it visually or manually or whatever. There should be no reason why they can't keep score for a player. And there are so many reasons against that. And the first, and we're going to talk about this probably tomorrow on the show before I head to the airport, is ShotLink is bad. It is bad this year. Very, very, very bad. I mean, that there are so many examples that I am compiling, and I will put this all out there. But there's so many examples of shots that you see and the data that you see associated with it that is completely wrong. So trying to automate that data capture, no thank you. I'm not doing that. We're not getting there yet. We're not there yet. We might not ever be there, but we're not doing it now. And then second, the people who have been manning these things, they're trying to get it to make it more automated capture. But the people who are running these things, they're volunteers for the most part. They're people looking for something to do on a weekday when the tour comes to town. And they are not professionals. They are trained over a couple of hours, and then they're there to capture the data. And if you don't do a good job, well, you're screwed. If you don't keep a track of something, a player's screwed. And third, the biggest reason, is that not every shot is shown on TV. And since not every shot is captured by a camera, you don't know. You don't have that backup to what could be bad ShotLink data. And so you can't guarantee that every shot's being tracked, so therefore you can't have it done automatically. Now, this has always been a rule about golf. You keep your own score, and someone else keeps your score for you in a tournament. You match them up. You make sure they're right. If you don't do your due diligence to make sure that that is done correctly, shame on you. Now, should the penalty be disqualification? No, I don't think it should be. I think that's kind of ridiculous. But you also have to settle who had the right version. So there's part of this that is not easy to decipher. So it's just easier to say, DQ, it's on you, the player. It's not on the person who kept the score. It is on you, the player, to verify that. And if there's a dispute, then that gets resolved. And I think that that probably should still stand as the case. But I would be okay with a two-stroke penalty. I would be okay with a two strokes for every stroke you're wrong penalty. So if, let's say, in Spieth's case, he should have had a 4 and it was a 3 and he got DQ'd for signing for a lower score, I would say, okay, well, you were wrong by 1, add on 2. But for whatever reason, let's say he had made a 5 and the scorer wrote down 3, then it would be 4 strokes. You know what I'm saying? Instead of a disqualification. So make the penalty for being precise significant, then I think you can do it. So that would be my solution here. But it is kind of funny. At least Spieth had the decency to come out and say, hey, I made a mistake. You know, that kind of stuff happens. And then be funny about it when Hideki won or was about to win. Like, make sure you sign for the right card. Double check that scorecard. And I think this is a rule that is important. I think being able to keep your own score is important. I don't think there's a good parallel to another sport for this kind of thing. So you need to be able to do that. It needs to be there. For so many different reasons, but the biggest one is there is a protection of the field involved here that I think people overlook and don't appreciate in an era where we have ShotLink, however faulty it is, so many TV cameras, so many people watching the golf that aren't playing golf, and yet still, somehow this got missed by the guy hitting the shots himself. At the end of the day, if that's going to happen, that's a carelessness that I think that should be penalized. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. Again, be back tomorrow. Back half of the week's a little dubious, but we'll try to do it for you. I hope you have a great week. Otherwise, if not, We'll talk to you a little bit later. You can get a hold of me on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. You can email me. I think I said this already, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I will be in the air tomorrow. I'll probably have Bloody Mary on the flight. Hopefully the tournament goes well, but no matter what, we're going to have a special week. Talk to you a little bit later. Thanks for listening to Two Off the First.